traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Worldwide equestrians of all breeds. This is Scott Miller coming to you live from Sunshine Meadows Equestrian Village in Delray Beach, Florida. We survived the hurricane. We got the backside of the hurricane. We got a lot of rain. The worst thing that happened to us was probably we had at one time 65 mile an hour winds. But we had no damage on the farm, just a lot of water, a lot of water. Not like the people did up in North Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and now it's even going into Kentucky. So we're praying for all those people up there and all the horsemen and all the people that are being the path of that. So, you know, it's always something in the agriculture business. And, you know, we're talking about a lot of things here today, but we're focusing mainly between now and the 1st of November. We're going to be talking about Breeders' Cup and the Kentucky Derby. We got a lot of horse shows and sales and everything that'll be coming up. We'll be talking about those too, but our main focus is going to be primarily on the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, it's hard to explain about the Kentucky Derby because most of the people that you talk to about it, all they know is it's the first Saturday in May and they're having a derby party and, you know, that type of thing. They know when it is and where it is. But there's a lot of things that you have to go through to get there. And one of the interesting things is that, you know, we haven't even really got a, we've only had one race so far, and that was the Iroquois at Churchill Downs on September 14th. That has already been run. So that started off the point system or the preparation season of 20 races for the Kentucky Derby. But, and it's kind of funny to say this or talk about it, but that's for the 2025 Derby. Now I'm talking about the 2026 Derby that's coming up, that'll be coming up here. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about over the next few days, it's going to be October, the yearling sales. So, you know, there'll be a lot of owners going to the October yearling sales at Fasig Tipton to, you know, get a new start on 2026 Derby. So, you know, like I said, the 2025 Derby is just now getting started. And here we're starting to look, you know, at the 2026 Derby. And it all starts at the sales and it starts with the owners. And the reason I'm telling you this is because we're doing the documentary, How They Get There, 2025 Kentucky Derby. And it kind of keeps me jumping and busy because the 1st of October, you know, we've got these yearling sales that are coming up and we're going to see who's buying and who's not. And, you know, who the hot sires are and, you know, who looks good and who doesn't. And that's going to be starting October the 1st. So that'll be a good day there, you know, to see what's going on. So we'll talk about that briefly. And, you know, I'm telling you, this year's Derby, I tell you, the change made some changes and some things that they're doing, and it's just going to be just be unbelievable. Like I said, the Kentucky Derby prep season is going to be 20 races long, the first stage of it. We just had the September 14th at the Iroquois. And then coming October the 5th, a week from this Saturday, we have the Breeders' Cup Futurity at Keeneland. It's a mile and a 16th. It's 10 points to the winner. Then we have the American Pharoah at Santa Anita on the same day, a mile and a 16th, 10 points to the winner. And then we have the Champagne Stakes also on October the 5th at Aqueduct at a mile. So, you know, that's, you know, these guys are kind of getting ready for it. You know, you're going to see a lot of horses making the entries, you know, for the races. And it's going to be interesting to see who's there and, you know, how well they did. Now, we had quite a few two-year-old races at Saratoga this year, and I'm starting to go through those races and see who's going where and kind of, you know, see what trainers think that they have. You know, when your debut at Saratoga for a two-year-old is really impressive. And that says a lot for the trainer, and it says a lot for the owner, and it says a lot for the horse itself. And what I mean by saying a lot is that says that he could be a potential stallion. And if he's a potential stallion, if you have a win and break your maiden at Saratoga in August, then, you know, you're on the way to maybe getting somewhere. Because that's very, very important, because the best of the two-year-olds in the country are at Saratoga in August. So that says a lot. Now, some of the trainers will run one of them at the beginning of the meet and maybe running back at the end of the meet, you know, 4 weeks later, 5 weeks later. That happens. So we're going through and we're going to see who did that with their horses. And then when you get through with that Saratoga win, you know, our race, depending on how you did. And then that's when you start looking for September 14th, which was the Iroquois. And so then you might bypass the Iroquois Stakes at Churchill to go on to the October 5th Breeders' Futurity, American Pharoah, or Champagne Stakes. Because now you're getting in that rhythm. You got to start getting in a rhythm with your horse in training. You know, about every 5 weeks is when you like to run them, 5-6 weeks, and then you go from there. Then from October 5th, you got a quick turnaround to November, the 1st of November for the Breeders' Cup for your two-year-old. And that's very important, you know, to get into a competition like that. And then that way, if you can get through November, the 1st of November, with a good, healthy horse and do good in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, then you can afford to lay the horse off for, you know, 30 days, you know, and get him rested up and let him recoup and let his body repair itself, you know, to get back into the swing of things. And that's gets you into that 5 week schedule again, you know, that you want to get into, with, you know, with your horses headed down towards the Derby. And I'll explain to you why in this segment here that we're talking about now. The next Derby points race is the Street Sense, which is October 27th at Churchill Downs. So, you know, we've had quite a few races, you know, already run. And that'll get you, you know, points for the Derby. And then November 1st, we have the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. It's a mile and 16th, and it's at the Del Mar Thoroughbred Club. Now, what's interesting about this is you're going out, and it's the Breeders' Cup. It's a Derby point, you know, race. So it's very important that you run in it. So if you're on the East Coast or in the South, or in the Northeast, you got a lot to think about. That's a lot of stress on that horse to get him out, you know, get him, fly him out to California, you know, get him acclimated to a track and the weather and the time, you know, situation, and get him in through the race and then get him back, you know, to normal, you know, to their normal work routine, like at Churchill or Keeneland or New York or wherever. So there's a lot of things coming up in the first series of races for, you know, Derby points. And let me tell you, it's a lot to think about. You know, where do you get your horse? Hopefully he runs good. And if you run him in one of those races we just talked about, he runs good, he recovers good and comes back. And, you know, and then you can proceed on, you know, go to your regular schedule. But this year, the Breeders' Cup being in California kind of throws things out of sync a little bit, because you're traumatizing your horse. It's only a two-year-old, and you're going all the way to California. You're getting on a plane, which he's never been on before. You've got new surroundings, new track, new weather conditions, just new water, new everything. Everything's new, with the exception of the feed. And if you feed hallway feed, you get the same feed that you're feeding wherever you're at out to California, because they deliver to everybody. And that's what I like about hallway feet. So, you know, now that you get him out there, and let's say you run good in the Breeders' Cup, you know, then you got a lot of thinking to do. Because then you come back, and at the end of November, there's the Kentucky Jockey Club, which is, you know, a 10-point race at Churchill. And then you got December 7th is the Remsen at Aqueduct. At Aqueduct. And then we got the Springboard Mile at Remington Park. And we got Los Alamitos Futurity at Los Alamitos. The Gunrunner at the Fairgrounds, December 21st. And then you're back to the start of the year. And, you know, you got to be ready to go. And hopefully your horse is, you know, running some of the previous races we just talked about. And he's fared well, and, you know, he's recovered well, and he's training good and growing good. You know, so that's a big thing right there. So now we're through the end of the year. And there's going to be a lot of horses that haven't gone the road that you might be going to through the races we just talked about. They might be pointing for the first of the year. And a lot of trainers will do that. So then you're looking at January 4th is the first Derby prep race for the 2025. That's at the Jerome Stakes at Aqueduct. Okay, now you got 5 months to get ready for the Derby. You'll have to run your horse at least three times from the January 4th until we get into the 1st of May, first Saturday in May. Some people might try to run them 4, but it's pretty tough on horses that are growing. It's a tough road to go. But you got the Jerome Stakes, it's in a mile, and it's Aqueduct, and it's the middle of the wintertime. Then January 4th, you have the Smarty Jones Stakes at Oaklawn Park in Hot Springs, Arkansas. The weather's not that bad there in the wintertime, so it's tolerable, so you might decide to go there. That's the Smarty Jones, and that's at a mile. Then you have January 18th at the Fairgrounds, it'll come out. And it is a 20-point race, starts the 20-point races for winning. That's January 18th. Then we've got the Southwest Stakes at Oaklawn Park, which is January 25th. And that's the 20 points, and that's going a mile. Then we have the Withers at Aqueduct, which is going a mile, on February the 1st. And that's going a mile. It's a 20-point race. Then he get out to Santa Anita. You've got February 1st, the Robert B. Lewis at Santa Anita going a mile on the 16th. That's a good race. It's stepping up. You got to have a mature horse, and you know, your horse has got to be ready for that. That's always a good race, the Robert B. Lewis. And it's a mile on the 16th, February 1st. Pretty good. Then February 1st, we have the Holy Bull at Gulfstream Park, mile on the 16th, 20 points. That's a good race to go to. It's in Florida. It's in the South. A lot of these guys have trained at Tampa and, you know, trained at Gulfstream, and here at Palm Beach Downs, they've trained, getting ready, you know, for the season. And, you know, they don't have to travel anywhere, because when you're in South Florida and traveling, you've got the Tampa Bay Downs that has a lot of Derby points to offer, and you got Gulfstream Park that has a lot of Derby points to offer. So you can kind of play around, you know, with you know, the two tracks and not tripping very much and, you know, doing things that the horse might be used to. So, you know, that's what you're looking at those two right there, the 1st of February. And then in February 8th, you got the Sam Davis, it's a mile on the 16th at Tampa Bay Downs. Now, a lot of people like to go to Tampa and here in South Florida and go over and run things, you know, like that, like the Sam Davis. It's a prep race for the Tampa Bay Derby, you know, that type of thing. The Holy Bull is a good prep race for the Tampa Bay Derby. You know, type thing, or the Florida Derby, and all. So, but the Sam F. Davis is really a good race. It tells you got a good horse if you can win that race. And then out in the middle of nowhere at Sunland Park, we have the Sunland Park Derby. That's a mile and an eighth, February 16th at Sunland Park. So you don't get too many ship-ins for that. Maybe some from California, but other than that, you don't see too many people shipping in for that race. It's a good race, you know, but it's just kind of gets you out of sync because it's in the middle of the month, and you want to stay away from all the races that are in the middle of the month. Then we have on February 26th, the John Battaglia Memorial at Turfway Park. It's a mile and 16th. Yeah, it's a 20-point race also, but it's February 26th. You don't get a lot of Derby horses there. You get a lot of, you know, hopeful well-wishers to go in there and say, well, I wish I could get in the Derby. Maybe I would go to John Battaglia. So that's kind of interesting, you know, to do that. But all again, like we're saying, you got to get in rhythm. You know, you got to get in a rhythm. And again, that's February 26th. That's at the end of the month. So it's kind of not in the game plan as far as traveling to the Derby. Then we get down to the fairgrounds again, February 15th. Again, not at the end of the month or the beginning of the month. We've got the Risen Star, it's a mile and an eighth at the fairgrounds. These are 50-point races. February 22nd, you've got the Rebel Stakes at Oaklawn Park, going a mile and a 16th. So now you're thinking, you know, well, you know, I got a good horse. Where do I go here? Because I just have March and April to get my horse, you know, ready. I've got 2 months to get him ready, you know, for the Derby, ready to go. And you're off schedule. You're either in the middle of the month or towards the end of the month. So now you got to rectify that, and you got to get your horse back into his works and training and racing at the beginning of the month. You know, so that makes it tough. So the Rebel Stakes is, like I said, it's February 22nd at the end of the month, mile 16th, 50 points to the winner. Then we get back on our regular schedule. March 1st, the Fountain of Youth at Gulfstream Park, going a mile and a 16th, 50 points. Then we have the Gotham Stakes at Aqueduct, going a mile on March the 1st, 50 points also. And we have on March 2nd, the San Felipe at Santa Anita, a mile and a 16th. So now you're back at the beginning of the month and you're going some distance. So you're getting something good for your horse. Then, not at the beginning of the month, but close enough to a Derby first Saturday in May. March the 8th, you have the Tampa Bay Derby at Tampa Bay Downs. It's a mile 16th. You're going for 50 points. So now you're back on the top of things again. And then this is the interesting one, I think, that's going to give a lot of these trainers that got off schedule of the, you know, first of the month, end of the month, you know, running. They added the Virginia Derby and the Colonial Downs. It's a mile and an eighth, 50 points also. So that's something that a trainer could look forward to because that gives you March the 15th. You got into April 15th, and then, 2 weeks later, you run into the Derby. So I think that's a good position to be in if you can go in and win a race like the Virginia Derby going a mile and an eighth. That's good. So that might be your salvation. Then if you just want to, run it close, March 22nd, you have the Louisiana Derby going a mile and 3/16. That's got 100 points. The Louisiana Derby has 100 points towards the Derby. So now you're looking at a situation that at March 22nd, it's kind of getting late in the game. That might be the last time you get to run your horse before the Derby. So that would be approximately 6 weeks before the Derby. Then you have the Jeff Ruby Stakes on March 22nd also at Turfway Park, a mile and an eighth, 100 points. And then this comes down to crunch time. This is what you know, you got a horse, and on the 29th at 5:30 in Central Time, you're going to be hearing a lot of trainers talking. A lot of trainers talking on March the 29th. I'd like to be the fly on the wall to find out when they're all together. You got all the owners together. You got the jockeys together. You got the whole staff together. You know, and now becomes decision time. You've gotten your horse to March 29th, And March 29th is the Florida Derby, the Arkansas Derby, and you're ready to go. They're both at a mile and a 16th. They both have 100 points. And to go to win one or the other of those two races, you can walk your horse into the winner's circle at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May. Those races are good. And usually if you do good there, you've got a horse that's the real deal. That tells you the real deal. Then on April 5th, you got the Santa Anita Derby. You have the Wood Memorial and the Bluegrass Stakes. Santa Anita, Aqueduct, and Keeneland. Now, April 5th is kind of a late date for, running. Not saying that it can't be done. A lot of horses have run in the Derby. Very few have won the Derby because you're looking at 4 weeks out from the Derby. And you got to take into consideration you're going to be shipping your horse. Let's say you win the Santa Anita Derby. You think you got a pretty good horse. Said he ran that mile on the 16th with no problems. We got our 100 points here in California. Now we got to ship into Kentucky. You got to fly your horse in. So you got a lot of stress and strain right there. You got to get him used to the new track. There's a lot of things you got to do with him. There's a lot of things that go into that decision. You know, and you're looking at the same thing, for the Wood Memorial. It's not as tough on a horse to travel, but it's something you got to think about. And a lot of trainers that are when the Wood Memorial ship directly into Keeneland, and a few days later they get them into Keeneland, and then they're ride it a month in advance, and in Kentucky, because of where they're coming from and all. So, you got that on to think about. And then the last Derby prep of the year is the Lexington Stakes, April 12th at Keeneland, going a mile and an eighth, 20 points to the winner. Now, a lot of the horsemen come out of there and they'll run like the Derby trial. They'll run undercard races at Churchill and do pretty successful. With it, but going right into the Derby from that race is almost an impossible task, to do, with them. So, that's just kind of briefly looking at what we were talking about getting to the Derby. It's just kind of tough situation to get into. What do you say? How do you say it? Where do you go to? All these decisions have to be made by the trainer and the owner and the jockey, the family. It's a big deal, when you get to thinking about it, because you got so many things. How often is my horse going to have to travel to earn his points? Am I going to base out of Florida, for the winter? Am I going to base out of Hot Springs or New Orleans or New York for the winter? There's just so many things that you got to think about when you're doing that. And it's kind of tough. It's a tough road to go. A lot of decisions have to be made. And let me tell you something. I'm telling you right now, the best horse may not win on the first Saturday in May, a three-year-old, because he might be somewhere else and they're going a different route and they're going to skip the Derby. That's going to be the interesting thing that comes up, to see what they're doing. So next week on the show, we're going to go into depth like we did today on the road to the Derby, the prep season. We're going to talk about the Kentucky Derby Championship Series. There are 16 races. Now, the ones that we just talked about, there's 22 races altogether there. And then they take it up another notch. Next week, we'll take it up another notch, and it's called the Kentucky Derby Championship Series. And it's a series of 16 races that they have to run in to get their points. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get in there and do that. So we'll take a look at that. And then the week after that, we're going to talk about the owners and the trainers and what they do and how they do it, and what their expectations of their horses running are. It's a whole different ballgame, I'm telling you. Once you get that Derby bug and once you start dreaming about the Derby, Man, oh man, let me tell you, there's so many things that go wrong. I mean, when my experience was, and I've been in quite a few Kentucky Derbies in my career, is once you get that decision to start going towards the Derby, you haven't made the decision to run in the Derby yet, but you're starting to point your horse to the Derby and thinking that you might have a horse to do that. Once you make that decision in the middle of September, every time your phone rings, you think it's the vet, it's the trainer, it's the groom, it's the jockey. It's just mind-boggling how many things, you know, get on your mind real quick. And also, you know, that's a tough thing. But the next 16 races that we're going to talk about next week will be interesting because they get real specific, and we're going to know who's running then and who's not. And that's going to be the big thing, you know. Who are you going to have to run against? You know, Brad Cox has always got a huge stable. You got great two-year-olds, so you're going to have to deal with him no matter where you run at, because he's running everywhere and everything. So, you know, a lot of things go into the owner's mind, the trainer's mind, the jockey's mind. You know, the jockey's got a tough race. You know, he just doesn't have your horse. He might have three or four other horses that are pointing towards the Kentucky Derby. And one thing that you've got to do when you are going for the Derby, you got to think about, especially for the jockey, you got to think about who's my best shot, who's my best trainer. You know, you might have old Dwayne Lucas over here might have a pretty good horse that's running good. You might want to stick with him because of, you know, what he's done before. But yet again, he might not have anything. So you got to be careful on the trainers that you choose. And when you choose them, you stick with them for the duration, right up through the Derby. You know, you just go in and you don't start jumping from horse to horse. You know, you don't want to do that, you know, with them. So we'll talk about a lot of that stuff, you know, more and more about it. You know, we'll talk more about the sales that'll be coming up next week. You know, that type of thing. And then one of the things here that I think is so funny is all the things that people like to do for the Derby, for the Preakness, and the Belmont. And we're doing a thing on our website. It's called Triple Crown Traditions. And it actually starts out with the Kentucky Derby traditions. But I've lumped all three of them together to see what we can do for our show. We're going to have a owner, a trainer, and a jockey. They're going to compete in a competition at each one of the tracks. Like, we'll have three for the Derby, and then we'll have three different owners and jockeys, trainers for the Preakness, and three different ones for the Belmont. And what we're going to do is they're going to bring their own Derby tradition recipe in, and we're going to have a cook-off, and then the winner of that one, he'll end up going to the Breeders' Cup at the 1st of November, and we'll have the final cook-off at the Breeders' Cup in Del Mar. And we'll see what they have. We don't know who's going to win it. Whoever has the best recipe and the easy fix for it, you know, they'll be our winner, and we'll have one for each track for Pimlico, for Churchill, and for Belmont on there. And you know, we're starting to get some feelers back from some of the people that I've talked to about what they want to make, you know, for their dish. And so we also kind of giving them a little advantage to take advantage of is they'll have to make their meal. And it'll be judged by a celebrity chef. It'll be judged by one of our announcers or reporters, one of our people, and one of the persons from the Kentucky Derby Festival, the Preakness Festival, and Belmont Festival. We'll get a good variety there. You know, we'll have a judge from each one of those categories in there. For example, we'll have like the perfect Kentucky Derby party. People will start telling us about it when they send in their application to join this contest. There's no better time to be in Kentucky and be a Kentuckian than in Derby season. And it's kind of funny, you know, how they've gone from the Derby event to now it's the Derby season, which is 30 days prior to the Kentucky Derby. They've got a week, 10 days long, a celebration in the city of Louisville. They got like a Thunder over Louisville. They got a parade. They got boat shows. They got, you name it, they've got it. I was fortunate enough right when I got out of college, my family had a farm in Southern Indiana, and I played on the Southern Indiana All-Stars, and they had a Kentucky Derby Festival football game between Kentucky athletes and Indiana athletes. And it was really pretty good because you got both sides of the river there, you know, to come out to the game. The money went for charity. And it was all just being part of the Kentucky Derby Festival, you know, and it was really good. And what I liked about it is we had a lot of young guys and we had some middle-aged guys, and then we had a lot of old guys in there reliving the day. And so it was quite an event. You know, we got a lot of celebrities out there that were playing and coaching and everything. So, but it's all part of that tradition, of the Triple Crown tradition. And the perfect derby party, man, is just unbelievable, the things that you can have there. You know, we're looking at all kinds of food. You know, we're looking at hot browns, Kentucky Burgoo, mint juleps, the oaks for the mint julep, and oaks and a lily on hand to drink, derby pie, a homemade chocolate nut pie. They have Benedictine chicken salad, pimento cheese sausage balls, and Spanish dip. And, man, let me tell you, they got a little bit of everything. But nobody does the same derby thing. And that's what I like about these traditions. There's no certain tradition that's official. It's not official. You come in there, you could have your own burgoo, you could have sausage in it, you could have chicken in it, no pork. There's just all kinds of things. And so, you know, we're like that. And we're going to see what some of these trainers and owners have. Some of these owners have been around a long time in their tradition. You know, they've done that probably 40 or 50 years, you know, that they've been doing it at their house and their farm. And so that's what I like about it, you know, doing that with the Triple Crown traditions. When we go to Preakness, the second race of the Triple Crown, on Preakness Day in Maryland, you know, at the eighth pole from all over the country, we come to see the Preakness. Good example, they're going to have crabs, crab cakes in Maryland. Maryland's known for seafood, some of the best seafood in the world. You know, they're going to be doing that. They've got oysters. They got what they call Smith Island cake. It wouldn't be a celebration without the cake. What better way to represent Maryland than with the official state? Now, this is the official state dessert. This supersedes the Preakness. It's official state dessert of Maryland. It's called the Smith Island cake. It's decadent cake. It's composed of 8 layers of buttery yellow cake and fudgery chocolate icing. So it's got all kinds of chocolate in it, 8 layers, you know, and that's an official cake of Maryland, folks. And then we have Old Bay as Maryland's tradition. It's not outsiders understand. It can be used almost anywhere, from seafood soup. The rim around a Bloody Mary, the Old Bay will find its way to your taste buds on Preakness Day. So, you know, that's what I like about them. That's a seasoning that can go literally into any and everything, but it's just part of the tradition of you know, the Preakness and the Preakness week there. You know, that is really something there. And then they've got the Black Eyed Susan cocktail, named after Maryland state flower, the Black Eyed Susan is an official drink. Again, we go back, it's an official drink to the Preakness. This delicious beverage consists of Maker's Mark, let's see here, vodka, orange juice, sour milk, and orange and cherry garnishes. So, you know, that sounds pretty different than a mint julep is at Churchill. You know, so they have that. You know, that's one of the things that they have there. And let me tell you, this mint julep recipe, it gets crazy. I'm telling you, it really gets crazy. You don't know how many people have their own version of the mint julep. You know, there's been times that you'd be making a mint julep up at home, and then all of a sudden you realize you don't have an ingredient, you need to go out and get it. And, you know, it might, instead of having limes, you might have lemons. You know, it's just all kinds of things that you have, you know, that you can do there with it. But, you know, the Preakness Steaks has the Black Eyed Susan, the mint julep for Churchill Downs. Of course, naturally you use mint, 2 ounces of bourbon, 12 ounces metal cup, silver or pewter is traditional, quarter ounce of simple service, and finally crushed shaved ice on there. But you see, the key to that one is the silver or pewter traditional glass to drink it out of. So that's easy to do. Then we have the Black Eyed Susan. The Black Eyed Susan is 1.5 ounces of Finlandia Laka, 1/2 ounce of grenadine, pineapple juice, lime juice, orange juice, and you get a Black Eyed Susan. So that's always interesting to see. And like I said, there's so many variations of it, it's not even funny. You know, you do your own thing there. Then at Belmont, they call it the Belmont Breeze. And man, I tell you, I've had a couple of those myself, and they are good. You know, it's all part of the Triple Crown deal. There, the Belmont Breeze is 1.5 ounces of the bourbon. Knob Creek, they recommend. 1/2 ounce of dry sherry, 1/2 ounce of fresh lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, splash of orange juice, splash of cranberry juice, 5 mint leaves, 1 mint spray, and 1 orange peel. And that has the Belmont Breeze all made up. But, you know, again, like I said, it's a tradition that you do, and there will be variations to each one of the, you know, the products that you do, especially in the food end of it. And we're going to really do, we're going to have video starting on Monday on our Triple Crown tradition on our newly rebuilt website. We're going to have a video of each one of the traditional things that they're going to have at the Derby. We're going to have the Kentucky Burgoo, how to make that. And our recipes go to how you make it from just a few people up to, you know, 20 people. And then we'll have seafood from Maryland. And of course, the New York cuisine is usually steaks and, you know, high end fish, lobster, shrimp, you know, what have you. You know, so we'll take a look at that and see what that's all about. But those videos will start this Monday on our website. You can go to them and see them, and it'll give you a link to get the recipes from that. And, you know, feel free to let us know what your recipe is and what your tradition is about. And then we can do a Skype or a GoToMeeting or, you know, an internet interview with you on the radio and TV, and we can do that. We'll find out exactly what you have, and even if you want to take us through the steps that you go through to cook your Triple Crown tradition recipe, we'll even put that video up, you know, for you. You can tape it and send it to us, and we'll run it, you know, on one of our shows that we have. So, you know, be thinking about that. And then let us know, you know, if you have a very big party. I talked to some people here last week that, you know, they were all excited about the horses. And I could tell when they came to the farm to look at the horses, they weren't horse people. I could tell you that from the get-go. You know, but they were excited. It was something they liked to do. They liked to go to the track. You know, they've been to the sales. They like to do all that stuff. And what was really funny about it is one lady came up and she asked me, she says, do you have to eat that food when you go to the track? She said, or could you just have a hot dog? I said, ma'am, you can eat whatever you want when you go there. But I said, I would suggest that you go to the festivals that are usually the week before the big race. And they have all the booths there, and, you know, they got you know, 100 people that are doing burgoo. They got 100 people that are doing, the seafood from Maryland and the food from New York for the Belmont Steaks. And I didn't think about it, but a friend of mine told me, he says, I said, well, how did you like the food? He said, real good. And I said, did you have a favorite recipe? He said, you know, Scott, he said, when you go in there to them tents where they're cooking all that food, they got little cups. And he said, they give you a little sample of it. And he says, I went through there, and he said, I had about 8 or 9 of those burgoo cups, sampled them. He said, then I went over to the next tent, and they had dessert cups. He says, I went the whole day, and he said, didn't spend a nickel. And I started laughing, and I said, you didn't do that? He said, I sure did. And he said, they were just the right size. And he said, 4 or 5 of them satisfied my taste from each of, you know, each food that he tested. And he said, it was really good. And also, but, you know, it just kind of goes to show you that it's a tradition that you do and you set up and you create it yourself. And, you know, like I was saying about before about the lady that I asked about what her tradition was, and she was having a big party at her farm. And so they had got a great big screen, giant screen that they had rented. They brought it out and they put it in their barn. And then they were showing all the racing and, you know, all the shows, the recipes and everything, you know, they had on DVD or, so had that. And so, you know, they said it was good. So they usually get about 100 people every year for the last 2 or 3 years to their party. And so what they like about it is everybody brings something. And, you know, you can never have too much burgoo. You can never have too much crab or shrimp or, you know, what have you. So it works out good. But, you know, they don't go to the track, and you know, because it's so crowded on Derby Day. And they do send a runner over when the betting windows open up on that Friday. When they open up on Oaks Day, they send people over and they go over and watch a few races, but they make all the bets for everybody, you know, that's coming to the farm. And they, you know, then whenever they win, of course, you got to take your tickets back over to Churchill, but then they go back over to Churchill like a week or two later and they go to the races and they cash their tickets, you know, so they get a big bounce out of it for their, you know, for their effort for their Derby party and everything. So that's kind of like, you know, what we're doing in that show. And we'd like for people to call us and tell us, you know, or email us and tell us what it's, you know, what there is. And like I said, if you want to send a video in, we'll be glad to take the video and air it. It doesn't cost you nothing but a little time to send it in. So be thinking about, you know, what your Derby tradition is and how many people do you have and, you know, we'll just kind of go from there with it. And then, you know, we got all those traditions and all those things that you got to go through to get to the Derby. You know, you got to be sure that you eat good, enjoy yourself. Don't drink too much, just enough to have a good time is what you need to do. And there, make sure that it's a family. The family gets together, the friends and neighbors get together. And let me tell you something. Back in Kentucky, I know a bunch of people that were always arguing and fighting with each other. But when it came to Derby time, this one gentleman, he had the best chicken and ribs in all of southern Indiana. And we had a guy that came over, and this guy, let me tell you something. He made the best potato salad and coleslaw that you ever did want to have. He was there. You know, and it brought all these people together, bringing a potluck to one place. And for one day, they were nice to each other. You know, did you win? Who do you like? You know, that type of thing. You know, so it's always a good thing. It's never too early to start. You can get up on Derby Day and start out with a nice breakfast and just hanging out at the house or the farm. And then when it gets time to go to the track, you can go to the track. Or when it gets time to go in and watch it on the TV, you can do that. You know, but it's all about tradition, you know. And like I keep telling everybody every weekend, what you need to do is you need to Google horses in your location. Just go ahead and put Google in Floyd County, Indiana. Google in, you know, Martin County in Indiana. You know, go Google wherever you're at, horses. And then you can see all the different breeds of horses and all the different horse events that they have in your area. And that's really, really something to know, because it makes good for a good outing with your family. You know, something that you can take people to when they come to visit you. You know, there's all kinds of things you can do. But Google horses for your area and see, you know, what all is there. And that's a good thing to do. And then, you know, you can start a tradition of your own. You know, you could be the Triple Crown tradition headquarters and go through all the races, inviting everybody over to your house. And then that way you don't have to travel, and they bring stuff. That's the great thing about these traditions. When you ask somebody over, they bring stuff, and you know, they always trying to, you know, outdo everybody else. And, you know, last year I had two people bring me Woodford Reserve bourbons. And I mean, I got so much, you know, booze there. There's just me that I could open up a liquor store. You know, I mean, that's the way it was. And, you know, and it's good. It gets good people together over there. And then, of course, you know, you can, you got the Breeders' Cup in that Triple Crown tradition, because that's something that's really getting big now is the Breeders' Cup, because it's a 2-day deal. It's a Friday and Saturday deal that you do with the Breeders' Cup. And so, you know, that's a pretty good weekend, you know, for you, food and drink and having friends over. But, you know, the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series is something that's kind of like the Derby deal. You earn points, you know, to get in the Derby. Well, with the Breeders' Cup, you have a win and you're in. And that's what I like about it. You go in and you win a race that's designated for the Breeders' Cup, and it's amazing. It's amazing what they do for you. Let me tell you, the Breeders' Cup releases a 2024 Challenge Series schedule. The qualifiers are on, now get this way, on five continents, because the Breeders' Cup is all about, you know, the world equestrian industry, and they got five continents that they come from. You know, and that's just amazing. Two of the five challenges series are in South America this year. They will also be the Primero Pampaloma and Hippodrome and DeMonico in Peru. And I know I get you all messed up, but all you got to do is, if you want to know, just go Hippodrome, Peru. That's all you got to do. And that'll get you to it. So, you know, we're looking at places in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. You know, it's just amazing what they have, you know, and where they're racing at. And the thing that I like about the Breeders' Cup win and you're in, it's a big benefit to the owners, and you really got to think about it. As a part of the benefits to the horsemen, the Breeders' Cup has allocated $5,485,000 in free entry fees for this year's Challenge Series. And we'll pay the entry fees to get into the Derby. If not already nominated, the Challenge winner must be nominated to the Breeders' Cup, so we'll help them pay that too. In addition, the Breeders' Cup will provide $10,000 in travel expenses for all starters within North America that are stabled outside of California, $40,000 travel allowance to the connections of all the championship starters outside of North America. So, that, you know, when you think about that, that's a lot of money being thrown out just for winning you're in, a lot of benefits to it, you know, that they do. And so there's 42 Breeders' Cup Challenge winners competed in the World Championships at Santa Anita last year. Eight won their respective division. Sorry about that. $6 million Breeders' Cup Classic went to a horse out of Ireland, and you know, it's just amazing what all they do. It's just amazing what they do, you know, with that. So, you know, it's exciting. And what I like about this series is like the Derby series are usually like 4 or 5 weeks apart, you know, and like this October 5th, we got 3 in one day. But with the Breeders' Cup, they're scattered all over the world. And, you know, they start like on the 1st of May, they start, and you know, then it's the 12th of May, 26th, 2nd of June, 8th of June, 8th of June, 8th of June, 18th of June, 18th of June, 19th of June, 20th of June, 23rd of June, all through the month, every weekend is what I'm saying. They've got winning your end races. And that's what I like, you know, if you like to get together and follow them. And, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, you say, well, I can't go to all those races. You know, I can't go to them. But you know what? If you come to IEM, let me tell you, you can watch them every weekend. You can watch them every weekend live on IEM. You do that, and you're in. And you're in with IEM. What do you think about that, folks? But it goes literally every weekend. It goes every weekend, and, you know, they've got all the good races. They got all the interviews. They tell you exactly what's going on. Keeps you up to date every weekend on IEN. And so that's what we like to do with that. But, no, it's about the horse industry is really getting good now. It's getting better. It was always good, but it's getting better. Because the horse industry of all breeds and all disciplines has realized that they have to make their event fan friendly. They got to have the right food for them there. They got to have the right, you know, location. They got to have a good, almost free to get in type thing, so you can go see them do their disciplines. You know, it's just, how do I say it? It's just something that you want to do, you know, and it's family. You know, a mom doesn't have to worry about, you know, the kids seeing dad gamble because there's a lot of stuff to do there, you know, so you kind of go as a family thing, but you kind of do your own thing. The moms like it because the food's there. You know, it's really good. There's a lot for them to do in most tracks have a little museum or a gift shop that you can go to. There's just so many things that you can do there. You see a lot of your friends and neighbors when you're out, you know, that type of thing. And I'm telling you, the horse business is really something good to get into. You know, I just couldn't believe you know, the people that we have coming here to Sunshine Meadows, and they're coming and asking about riding lessons. And, you know, we've got a kid that's four years old, is learning how to ride, and it's going to be a few years before this kid can ride. But the kid's out there, he's on the horse or she's on the horse. They learn about saddle and stirrups, bridle and reins. You know, they learn all that stuff. And it gets them away from, you know, the iPods and, you know, the computers and all. You know, so it's a good family event. In fact, we had one event, one lady that came out here, and she says her daughter and her granddaughter, you know, like to ride. So she gave them a birthday present to go on a trail ride here at Sunshine Meadows. Well, next thing you know, I see her about a month later, and I said, well, where are the family, you know, where's the daughter and the kids at? She said, oh, they're in school and the daughter's working. She said, but I came out to take my trail ride. So, you know, she just realized she didn't need the family to trail ride. It was nice to have them, you know, but not necessary. And also she was out doing that. So they're good family events. And like the Kentucky Horse Park, for example, is a good place to go learn about horses. They literally have every breed that you can think of in the world is there, and they're stapled there in an exhibit. And you can come out and you can walk up and you can pet them and see them. And, you know, they explain to you who they are and where they're from and what they've done and, you know, that type of thing. And the horse parks are really good to go to. Very educational. You know, they usually have good food there, places they sit down and eat. And it's an all-day thing. They usually have shows and exhibits, and they always have a gift shop there where you can buy, you know, little horse items, and they're good to go to. Now, let me tell you, the best time to go to Kentucky, if you want to get good Christmas gifts this year, you go to Kentucky, to the Kentucky Horse Park, or you go to Keeneland Racetrack, to Keeneland, or to Ellis Park, or to Churchill Downs in the fall. Man, you can get a lot of good Christmas presents then. And then all you got to do is worry about hiding them and keeping them away from everybody until Christmas gets here. But, you know, it's all about family, and that's what I like. You're certainly invited to come here to Sunshine Meadows. We're on 441, south of Atlantic Boulevard. You can't miss us. Just ask anybody. They know where we're at. Then we have Palm Beach Downs, which is you come down Atlantic Avenue, and once you cross 441, you make it right at the first driveway, and that's our Palm Beach Downs farm, which is all of our thoroughbreds. We got 160 horses coming in for Todd Pletcher this year. He's literally taken the whole farm, and you'll see quite a few of the Derby runners that he has there. You'll see the runners that he had for the Breeders' Cup this year that's coming up. They usually come back to Palm Beach Downs when they're through running in the Breeders' Cup and all their other races, and they rest them up and lay them up here, what they call lay them up and rest them up, and then they get back into training, and then they do it all over again. You know, so we do that and everything. But you're more than welcome to, you know, come down here and visit with us here. I'll personally take you on a tour of the farm, all three of our farms that we have. We've got 750 horses that'll be here by the middle of October. Some of the best trotting horses in the world are here. We've got Casey Coleman. We've got Alexander's here. We've got Lindy Farms is here. You name it, we got the big guns that are here. And same with our show horses. They're really good. They're always competing at the NCAA level or the, you know, the world and national levels. So that's what we want you to do, is to come down and visit us with Sunshine Meadows, Delray Equestrian, Palm Beach Downs. And I guarantee you, we are the place for past, present, and future champions. Tune in next week, and we'll give you a rundown on the October 5th Derby prep races.